Once a month, when the moon was full and the weather was right, she would invite the child out to the night garden. The garden at night scared the child, who was afraid of the dark, so she would always stay inside. It was time again for applying the fish emulsion, the ritual feeding of the roses with the bodies of liquidated bass and trout. It was a sight, her mother working through the night. When the child looked out the nursery window, she saw fireflies plastered to the outline of her mother, and she watched her like that for a long time. Small things seemed to attach themselves to her, to cling. When the raccoons came, as they always did, with their awful, tiny, human hands pressing, the child would be jealous, and she would try to force herself out the door, but she could not. And in the morning, stinking of fish and roses, and wiping away bits of fur and fin, the mother would bring the child out into the daylight world, dropping her off at school or camp or wherever it was the child was going that day. And the men would pant and swoon and grab the mother, and the boys would hum and trip and fall. And this alarmed the child, for they lived in a household without boys who hummed or men. How laughable is mankind! The glittering mother laughed. How laughable is the human race! Mother, don't laugh like that, the child begged, and she reached out to try to hold something of the gleam. The mother knew she would have to wait for the day when the men would at last leave her alone. The mother on that day will become invisible to them, and she will at last be able to live unencumbered, and she will dance in the cities all night, and she will dance in the valleys and in the night gardens. Until then, she will have to bide her time. Exiled from childhood, but in the constant presence of it, the mother felt covetous of the child sometimes, because the child still had childhood, and to the mother childhood was no longer accessible. There was no going there again. She could only watch. She was walking, she knew, on thinning ice. Even the mother's mother, the North Pole grandmother, was not young anymore. The light was bright in summer there, late into the night. When the North Pole grandmother came with a platter of fish preserved in vodka and lingonberries, the fish had a face on it, and the children ran and hid. In winter, the candles were lit, and there was juniper and holly. The child is busy making sculptures out of apples in the corner. Next, she is sculpting a boat. Even the child will one day die. It takes 3 cups of salt to cure a fish. The mother tries to remember being small, but as an adult remembers. Not as an adult remembers, but as a child, but it is hard. She would like to fit inside a thimble, and someday she probably will. There is a casket the size of a walnut shell that waits in the garden. There is a husk. There is always the sorrow of the last morsel of fish to consider. Many of the children are still hiding in the garden. When she was little, she remembers going into the sewing box and taking out her favorite thing, a pincushion encircled by Chinamen. When she was small, she remembers the bright thimble and the way it looked like a castle on her thumb. The North Pole grandmother was in the next room, where the child could hear her preparing the fish. Lingonberries are something else she remembers. While the mother reaches to remember, the child wishes she had a picture phone so that while she talked to the North Pole grandmother, she could see her face and watch her white hair blowing in the wind. The lifespan of a North Pole grandmother is 83, the child reads. The mother received a telephone call from her sister Inga. The sister had some bad news. The child had never seen her mother listen harder to anything than she listened then. The listening had a hard, smooth quality to it, like ice, only hot. After she hung up, the mother curled up into a ball and did not speak or move for a day and a night. The child watched her mother curled up like that, and she thought about nests, and she thought about shells. She felt so alone, she did not know how she would bear it, and so worn by the duration of time. After a day and a night, the mother finally uncurled, but the child saw the mother held something still clenched in her hand. When the mother saw the child, she wept and opened her hand. "Look," she said. In her hand she was holding the left ventricle of a heart. The child took the left ventricle of the heart from the mother. She walked down the hallway and she laid it on her bed. Although it had looked blurry and ruined on the X-ray, here it did not look bad at all. She was happy to have it on the pillow next to her. This way, if anything went wrong with the heart, she would know right away. It cast the room in ruby light. After pink, red was her favorite color. She thought of her aunt, 7.5 states away. After a while, the child fell into dream. A kindle of kittens appeared under the bed. A clouder of cats soon came to join them outside under the sill. The mother came in to look the kittens under the sill, and they began to breathe. There was mother's milk for all. Then the mother went outside again with the others. Everything seemed contingent on this arrangement. The clouder under the sill, the kindle under the bed, the ventricle next to the sleeping child, slowly repairing itself. One more. Snow falls on the roots cold of the mother and the sleeping small clawed animals in their burrows and tunnels and winter vegetables that lie peacefully untouched under the earth. When she walks on the earth's crust, she grows drowsy now, feeling their sleep. Magnified, so many sleeping creatures multiplied, she can barely lift a foot. "What is wrong?" the child says, and lies on the ground on her back and helps the mother lift her feet, one boot at a time. The child has read that beneath the city of Paris, there is another city. There you can find a home for abandoned children. "I should like to see where the animals sleep in winter," says the child, watching her mother's eyes slowly begin to close.